Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And, you know, I don't know. I'll tell you, it is just... It's sad to look at the so-called experts in the world and the ones that advise everybody that give you this ridiculous load of crap that, to me, it's really nonsensical to hear some of the things that I hear. And, of course, as you know, I do a lot of TV and media. And to a man and woman... You have most of the bozos talking about we're going to the moon. We're going to the moon. Let's keep buying. And I'm not saying we're not going up. I don't predict long term. You know, I mean, I actually do predict. I am predicting the long term, but I don't look at the short term and say, well, that's going to happen today. It's going to happen tomorrow. I do these things and I watch and I listen. And I was doing Varney on Tuesday, which I'll play for you later. I decided to look at something because, you know, I can see that although the markets are higher, there's a lot of things there that aren't logical. So I decided to pull up and look at the most widely held stocks in the world, or in the world, you know, in the United States. And because... The reason that we look at the most widely held is very simple. The most widely held affect most of the people. Most widely held, and because many of us aren't self-investors, in other words, we're not self-directed, we're involved, you know, we're in a mutual fund, we're in a fund somewhere, and most of the funds carry names like this, and I'm going, okay, cool. So what is it? Why are we so excited about a market? I heard a stat the other day that 10% of the S&P stocks are responsible for 106% gain. Okay, I can live with that. That means that 10, that's like the normal workforce. 10% of the people do 90% of the work. 10% of the people do 90%. And of course, in the S&P case, 10% is carrying the index. But in the stock market, it's a little bit different because, again, we hear of growth. We hear of all of these things that are important in life. And of course, what we find out is that, let's look a little bit deeper. So I decided to look up the 20 most widely held stocks. And of course, number one is Apple. Now, Apple's a great company. I don't have a problem with Apple. I'm not against Apple. I would buy it at the right level and own it. In the meantime, Apple's unchanged, basically, for the year. Now, it's had some nice gyrations. It went up, it went down, it went up, it went down. But at the end of the day, it's unchanged. Microsoft, big performer this year. Finally, after all these years, and again, I'm not telling you that you shouldn't own these. I'm just saying up 20%. Okay, Google is up 50%. But when I look deeper, now we all know that the energy stocks are way underwater, and there's a bunch on this list because that's a big solid place, and you've got Exxon, Chevron, Schlumberger. You know, they're down around 20% each. Now, so even if you eliminate those, you can't really eliminate them. Okay, but let's say you just take those out and you go, okay, well, what about, you know, we know oil's been in trouble, so what about some of the other good stocks? Like, okay, IBM, down 20%. Now, Big Blue ain't Big Blue. I think it's Black and Blue now. They've, you know, I used to compare Microsoft to IBM because they, you know, sometimes these companies get so big, they can't do anything and their innovation starts to suck. And I think that was what Apple was always worried about. And I don't know if their innovation is starting to get to that point yet, because if you get so big, it's hard to do better. But we'll give them a pass for the moment while I'm making my point here. So then we always hear about, well, consumer staples. Got to be in, got to have them. Well, Procter & Gamble, you know, we need toilet paper. We need toothpaste. We need the other tea stuff. You know, we need goods. Oh, but Procter & Gamble's down 20%. Johnson & Johnson, another, you know, big name, down 5%. But I think the bigger surprise is we all love the tech space and everyone wants to get in. And Qualcomm, down 30%. So my point is, simply, okay, in Walmart, that didn't even make the top 20 most widely held anymore, it's down 37.5%. My point is simple. Okay, yes, the stock market is higher, but the market is being driven artificially. Now, again, it doesn't matter if you're trading the big stocks, if you're trading the S&P or you're trading the diamonds, then the indexes are either flat or higher. And I don't want to mislead anybody, but I also don't want anybody to think that when you hear some jackass come out and tell you how bullish it is and how great the economy is, that you're not looking underneath the hood a little bit. Now, again, trading and investing have nothing to do with each other from a short-term standpoint, but in a long-term, you will need to understand what is going on. So I look at it and I say, wow, well, this top 20 list is down about 20% or so for the year. That's a bear market. Now, again, I don't want this to be about the market, bear market, bull market, whatever. What I'm saying is that when we look at it, you have to say, okay, I get that, okay? But I don't, you know, look, at the end of it, I want to be in the stock market long term. I want to be hedged so that I can overcome when these things do happen. But I do want to be protected. But I do want to understand why people get out there and give me this BS bunch of baloney that just buy, and just basically blindly buy, because, you know, that is for the blind. And we don't want to be blind. We want to be smart about our investments. Okay, and you're not always going to be right. You are not always going to pick the correct one, but give yourself a better shot. And stay away from when somebody tells you how bullish it is, how great it is, and they go and they recommend a stock, and what's your disclosure? What's your ownership? Oh, I don't own any of it. Oh, well, if you're so damn bullish, how can you not own part of it? Right? I mean, if a fund manager is on TV telling you that he's so bullish ABC company, and they ask him the question and they show the disclosure, do you, your company, your family, anybody own this? And they goes, no. Well, it would seem to me that if I was so bullish it and was going to announce it to the world, that I might want to own a little bit of that. Does it make sense to you? I'll tell you, it makes me scratch my head, you know, and just interesting. But anyways, as you know, Thinkorswim, TD Ameritrade is a sponsor of our program, and they offer every day. They have swim lessons and today's lessons, calendar spreads and volatility strategies. Check it out. Always check them out. Again, we get a great rate from them. We have great, not power, but we have a very good working relationship that we can help you do a lot of things that you might not normally be able to do. So make sure you go to check out Thinkorswim. It's built by traders for traders, and it is the platform that I use. And especially if you're in Canada, I mean, I get you a barnstorming deal that, you know, basically it'll pay for anything you need because it's so much cheaper than what you're paying right now. So reach out to me. You can reach me at Bubba at thebubbashow.org or Bubba at bubbatrading.com. Either one. I'm going to step out here for a break. I'll be right back. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here right after the break.
Welcome.
back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with you. And, you know, I tell you, it's funny. You know, I love to do Varney. You know, obviously I love to be on TV anyways. But I love doing Varney, and I love his what he says and what he does, and, you know, the controversy that gets stirred up sometimes. But on Tuesday, you know, I did a spot with him, which I'm going to share with you in a minute. But, you know, I've now got a new name. I'm getting called now Darth Vader. So don't be surprised if you ever watch Varney Tuesday mornings at 9:30 Eastern time, if you see me one time show up in the Darth Vader mask. But let's go check out what I had to say with Stuart Varney and his crew. Here we go. This is from Tuesday.
What, 1,000 points away from its all-time high. Here we go. It's Tuesday morning. I can say that reliably. It's still morning. Okay. It's kind of lunchtime for me. But we're up 10 points in the very early going. 15 points, 16 points. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. 17.5 is where we are. First stock of the day to look at, Walmart, the gigantic retailer. Stock is up in the early going. $1.45, still shy of $60 a share. They came in with good profits this morning. To discuss the opening of the market and where are we going, bring in Ashley Webster, Liz McDonald, Mike Murphy's here today, and so is Todd Horowitz down there in Chicago. Mike, to you first. Walmart, nice bounce today, but still shy of 60. Would you buy it?
I would not buy it.
Why?
Walmart's bouncing today because they lowered their guidance a couple of weeks ago, Stuart. I think Walmart has one huge problem, and that's Amazon. Amazon sales are growing a lot faster than Walmart's are. This is a good quarter on a
Look at that chart. You see that?
Absolutely.
Ooh, ouch. That one hurts.
Yeah, you could write Amazon right under that chart. Okay. I think Walmart may have bigger problems. I wouldn't jump in here and buy it, especially as it's moving up.
Liz, let me deal with Home Depot for a second. I want to ask you about this retail ice age. But look at Home Depot. That stock is up as well. Yeah. Nearly $4, 3% up. Same story. Good sales, good profits. Now, that we've had analysts on this show saying, here comes a retail ice age. No,
because instead there's an inventory buildup. You saw that at a number of ports. They're showing imports were slowing down at three major ports because there's an inventory buildup. What does that
What's
mean?
What's that got to do
Sharp,
with?
Because they're basically the goods, they overestimated,
warm
you know,
weather.
The consumer power and warm weather. And yeah, right. But, you know, here's we're going to see deeper discounts. That's what we're hearing from Wall Street. And it's going to be a big holiday shopping season for discounted goods at these retailers.
All right. Todd Horowitz. Good profits and sales at Home Depot and Walmart. Are you using that as an economic indicator?
Good morning, Stuart. No, I think that Walmart is having a little bit of rigor mortis, a little bit of a bouncer. I think it probably goes back lower. They have a lot of other problems that are hidden. Home Depot is just telling me that there's no housing, there's no new housing, so people are fixing up their old, and they do have a ton of supply, and there's going to be a huge discount quarter. Where are these companies going to make the margins? When it's all done, it comes down to money, and they're not making money when it comes down to it. And that's what I want to see, is the real growth and the growth in the profit margins, which we're not seeing.
Oh, you know, what I'm picking up from this conversation is discounts, deep discounts for the holiday
period. Yeah, which is not great for the retailers. To Liz's point, they've got to build up of inventory. Sure. They have to slash prices to get rid of it.
It's great for us, though.
But don't forget terrorism, too. I hate to throw that in, but more people want to go online than go out into the crowds in the malls.
Yeah, that's true. But I think the retailers, they're really sharp people. They're smart about it. And I think that we're going to have a really decent holiday shopping season when you talk to the analysts on Wall Street.
Oh, the sunny side up, Liz McDonald.
I agree. Just on Home Depot, you know, it's really hard. We're trying to find problems in the quarter, but these guys, to me, are hitting on all cylinders. The management really knows how to handle what's going on, and this speaks, it's more tailwinds for the overall market. Housing is strong. I'm not saying people are going out buying houses, but people are going out spending money on their houses. That's why Home Depot stock is sitting at all-time highs. But remember, people don't go out onto Amazon to buy 2x4s.
Exactly.
So people are going into Home Depot. They're spending time there. They're spending money. Still the best name in retail, I think.
You just gave Amazon a new idea. Go into the Home Depot.
The 2x4 market. I want to talk the overall market for a minute, because the Dow is up again with 24 points higher, 200 points up yesterday. Todd, the market seems to be just shrugging off the terror attack in Paris and the aftermath thereof. Shrugging it off, Todd.
I think, look, it was a very easy tell. When you saw Friday, we had the big panic right at 4:15. By Sunday night, the panic had kind of worn off, and you saw the futures open much lower, but they came right to a spot, stopped on a dime, and by then they were off to the races rallying, because The fear was gone. It has subsided. Plus the fact that this opens the door for the Fed not to raise rates again. So what it's doing, it's propelling the overall market. But it did come down to a reasonable level of support. 2,000, the S&P, was a good spot to look to be a buyer. And we're getting a nice bounce off it. We get to 2080, you probably want to sell it again. We're really pretty much range-bound here.
You might. The question that people always ask me is, the world's on fire and the stock market goes up. What's with that? Can you explain this?
I can. I believe I can. I thought of you yesterday, Stuart. So the market, oil, on the heels of this news, oil is trading higher, and all of a sudden it goes lower. Market goes lower and follows it. When oil reversed course midday yesterday, that's when the market followed it higher. So as oil moved up over 2% on the day, the market rallied to new highs. I think if you watch oil here, I think with Putin getting very aggressive, I think you're going to see the oil market move back up towards $50, and I think that's what's going to take us to new highs on the S&P.
Really? So if oil goes back up towards $50 bucks a barrel, the stock market goes up some more. Todd, you're shaking your head. I can hear you groaning.
I mean, we might touch new highs, but we're going significantly lower here. If you look at the top 20 most widely held stocks, they're down a net of about 15% for the year, and that's what affects most Americans. We can talk about the Dow right now because there are certain stocks that are driving these numbers, but overall, most people hold part of the top 20 most widely held, the Apples, Walmarts, and those of the world. 10 are down over 20%. And there's a few of them that are up, Google being up 50%. But the overall picture is ugly, and it's getting uglier.
Well, we're 3% off our highs. So I think that tells you that people can accept where the market is right now, and there is money on the sidelines to be put to work.
That's a small quantity. That's not the overall people. That's 5% of the population is involved in that much of the market. The overall average investor is going to get walked down the primrose lane again and stuck to them because they're involved in the Walmarts of the world that's down 37%. They're involved in all those widely held stocks that are down tremendously. They're not involved in all these high flyers.
Right, you know, Todd,
very passionate.
We heard you. All right. I want to look at some individual stocks specifically.
And of course, there we go. And, you know, you got to see, you know, obviously my passion, but you guys get to see that all the time on my show. And, you know, at the end of it, that's what we're talking about. Okay. It's about the average investor. Screw these money managers that talk this garbage all the time, because that's exactly what it is. It is garbage, because most of us are not involved in those types of trades. So show me a hedge fund, show me an investing fund that's making big money. They're not. They're all struggling. So these experts can get on TV every day and tell you how great it is, but at the end, just look at the numbers. Okay, look at the numbers. That's all that counts when you look at it. And what we're seeing is that most are not participating in what's going on here. Even the geniuses in the room, the smart guys, the icons, the Soros, they're chasing around too, because the market is in trouble, because there are problems. But can we continue to say, you know, let's quit selling our book of business. Let's quit worrying about, you know, how we're going to raise money, okay? And let's get into what the hell's wrong with this and how we're going to fix that. That's the one beauty you get with me, is I've got no axe to grind. I don't manage money. I manage my own money. The Badger and I trade our own dough, okay? We're not worried about what everybody else is doing. And that's why you get the straight scoop from what we're seeing. Okay, not anything else. There's no advantage here. I'm not trying to raise money. I'm trying to tell you how to protect yourself. And that's why I'm just telling you. You have to check out my hedging program. Because, again, the average investor is going to get walked down that lane again. You can bet on it. You know, the green mile, it's coming. It's coming to a theater near you. But wouldn't it be nice not to have to worry about it? You get a pardon. Okay. I'm going to give you a pardon if you come with me and learn what I have to teach you. I'm going to pardon you, because you're going to be able to stay in and not have to worry about it. Between the Badger and myself, we've got it down to a very good science. Okay. all about the math. So if you want, if you're tired of the BS and you want to protect what you own, go to the BubbaShow.org and check it out, or BubbaTrading.com and check it out under the hedging programs. We've got a new one starting next Tuesday. So make sure you check it out. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm going to step out here for a break and chill out a little bit, but I'll be right back with more of the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, the Bubba Show, will be right back.
Hold my hand.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Yeah, that whistle is 10 o'clock. Don't let it go. Don't let it go.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you, and of course, what would something political going on without having our friend Bill Whittle stop by? So let's check out what our guy Bill's got to say here. I think it's important stuff. So let's go to Mr. Bill Whittle right now.
But ISIS is gaining strength, aren't they?
Well, I don't think they're gaining strength. What is true is that from the start, our goal has been first to contain, and we have contained them.
President Obama claimed that the Islamic State was contained just one day before ISIS gunmen took over a theater, attempted to bomb a stadium, murdered 129 people and injured 352 more, some critically, in Paris on Friday. Hi, everybody. I'm Steve Green. This is Trifecta. So how well is ISIS contained and how well is the president handling the situation? Let's bring on Scott Ott and Bill Whittle to talk about Barack Obama and the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad press conference. And I think I've used that headline before on this show, folks. Gents, President Obama insisted on Monday that ISIS was indeed contained, but was almost immediately contradicted by fellow Democrat Senator Dianne Feinstein, who said that ISIS is not contained, but is in fact expanding. That's her word. And ABC News commentator and former and forever Democratic operative George Stephanopoulos, even he questioned the president's claim. The editors at The Federalist, that's a conservative publication, they wrote that the president's performance alternated between defensive and disinterested, despite a more than year-old promise to degrade and ultimately destroy the Islamic State. He repeated that phrase on Monday. Watch.
Now, tragically, Paris is not alone. We've seen outrageous attacks by ISIL in Beirut, last month in Ankara, routinely in Iraq. Here at the G20, our nations have sent an unmistakable message that we are united against this threat. ISIL is the face of evil. Our goal, as I've said many times, is to degrade and ultimately destroy this barbaric terrorist organization.
That's a pretty tough talk, but the president first promised to degrade and destroy ISIS on September 3rd, 2014, and if you listen to the man, his heart just isn't in that. Oh, and yet, I should mention, their attacks, ISIS attacks on the West, they keep getting bolder and deadlier. Degrade and destroy. Obama keeps saying those words, but I do not think they mean what he thinks they mean. What do you think, Scott?
Listen, the strategy of contain, degrade, and destroy is something you do when you are the weaker power. When you're going into a military situation and you know you don't have the mustard to take them out right away, you say, you know what? Our first thing that we're going to try to do is hem them in. And then as we build in strength, we're going to degrade their ability to attack us. And then ultimately, we hope to be able to destroy them. You do not have a strategy like that when you are the superpower, the world's sole superpower. And to openly admit that this is a civilizational threat, this terrorist group that has done these horrible things, and he rattles off all the places where they've committed these horrible acts. And then to say to those people who live in those places, look, here's our strategy. We want to stretch this out. It's going to take a good long time because first we're going to contain, and then we're going to nibble away at them, degrading them. And then ultimately, at some point down the road, we may destroy them, but we don't actually have a plan for that.
No, he really doesn't. You know, Obama, he wasn't totally disinterested during that presser. He did show just one moment of real passion, even anger. But it wasn't against ISIS. Instead, it was against some of his fellow Americans. Watch this clip.
Folks want to pop off and have opinions about what they think they would do. Present a specific plan. If they think that somehow their advisors are better than the chairman of my Joint Chiefs of Staff and the folks who are actually on the ground, I want to meet them. And we can have that debate. But what I'm not interested in doing is posing or pursuing some notion of American leadership or America winning or whatever other slogans are they come up with. That has no relationship to what is actually going to work to protect the American people and to protect people in the region who are getting killed and to protect our allies and people like France. I'm too busy for that.
That clip just gets worse and worse the more I see it. Bill, I don't think I could possibly set you up better than the president just did.
No.
So how do you pop off to Obama's claims?
Well, first of all, I'd be happy to give him my email address because I have a much better plan than he does. And my plan doesn't involve slogans like American leadership or weird slogans like America winning. I have an actual plan for American leadership. And the result of the plan is America winning. And what you do is you go in there with a severe amount of air power. You immediately destroy any vehicle that's moving. We know where these people are. I've been to CENTCOM. I've been to the Joint Operations Center in CENTCOM. We know where they are. We know where they live. Nothing that they own moves on the ground. Nothing by day or night that we don't know about. And those things simply go away, and they go away in 48 hours. They go away through Predator drones. They go away through targeted airstrikes. They go away through cruise missile strikes. We don't lose a single guy doing that. That's the very first thing we do. We make sure they can't even talk to each other. We destroy their command and control centers immediately. Unlike Al-Qaeda, which is a network of terror cells that operate behind the scenes in order to sow discord, ISIL is about territory. They have a base, they have cities, they have vehicles, and we can destroy them in 48 hours if we want to, but that would involve American leadership and other slogans about America winning. And we all know, Steve, that this president has no interest in American leadership or America winning or any other slogans of that nature. Just look at the man's body language. Listen to the pace of his speech. The entire idea is disgraceful to him. This speech here is basically an admission. It's an admission of what he's already claimed basically on the cover of magazines, and that America is going to lead from behind. You see, we're going to lead from behind. That's the new kind of leadership that this guy represents. The word for leading from behind is cowardice, and it's defeatism. And these are the things that are being evidenced right now by the president. And I use the slogan President of the United States of America, not to suggest America winning or America leadership or anything, only because that's what this guy is. He's a slogan for America. He's a left-wing slogan about what we should be doing by leading from behind. We could solve this problem very quickly, as Scott said, but we're not serious. And Steve, the reason we're not serious is the same reason that he will not say who the enemy is. You can pry an ISIS out of him.
You can pry an ISIL out of him, but you'll never pry an Islamic out of him. You'll never pry Muslim out of him. You'll never pry jihad out of him. Those words will not come out of his mouth because he's on their side, because the President of the United States has stood before the United Nations and said that the future does not belong to those who insult the Prophet of Islam. So I don't know if anybody has any other questions, but to me, this is actually pretty straightforward.
It really is. And you know what, Bill, it's actually worse than you say. In that clip, I counted seven logical fallacies. Here they are in order. The appeal to ridicule, the ecological fallacy, the Nirvana fallacy, false authority, the moral high ground, the abusive fallacy, and finishing up with a thought-terminating cliche. Folks, you can pull that quote up on Google, compare with my list, see for yourself. And I don't mean the entire press conference, mind you, but just in that little clip that we just showed you just now. All right, enough of that. You know, folks, during World War II, 1984, author George Orwell argued that pacifism is objectively pro-fascist. He went on to write in this famous essay, "This is elementary common sense. If you hamper the war effort of one side, you automatically help that of the other. Nor is there any real way of remaining outside such a war as the present one. In practice, he that is not with me is against me." I think maybe we heard somebody else say those words. Mm-hmm. Now, 2 years later, Orwell ended up repudiating himself. So who knows, maybe in 2017, I'll take back what I'm about to say. But when I hear a president just days after a deadly attack in the heart of the capital city of America's oldest friend, when I hear an American president say what I'm not interested in doing is posing or pursuing some notion of American leadership or American winning, then I can only draw one conclusion. POTUS is objectively pro-jihadi. For PJTV, I'm Steve Green.
And, of course, this has been talked about in the past. There's the talk of who our leader is. But, again, I think that overall, they have done a horrible job at this whole ISIS deal. They have to take him out. We need to get boots on the ground. Yes, I know I'm not happy for our soldiers, but at some point, you have to step to the next level. And this is the time to step to the next level. We cannot and should not have to have the fear of waiting for the next attack, because where is the next one going to be? In New York, Chicago, Los Angeles? Or maybe simultaneously. We need to do something now. We do not need to wait for the next attack, because you can bet your ass it's coming. So we're going to step out here for a break, but make sure you catch the Bubba Show at libertytalk.fm on demand. If you can't catch it live, it's there for you every day, recorded, ready to go. You can listen to it at your convenience. But for now, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. I'm going to step out of here for a break. Make sure you check out the website and look into our hedging program, The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show.
The song was written by Fred Ebb and John Kander.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with you. And, you know, I'm so frustrated with, you know, what happened at Hunter College last week and what's going on at Yale. But I wanted to bring in some guys, some of the experts, to talk about this. Let's go to our friends, Bill Whittle and Scott and crew, and hear what they have to say. Here we go.
Well, hello, America. You remember Halloween, don't you? It's a time for small children across America to dress up and have some fun, a chance for their pre-adolescent imaginations to run wild and to willingly undergo a little fright in the name of good, clean fun. Well, fun of any kind is antithetical to the progressive left, of course, and so the pre-adolescent imaginations of the small children that now attend Yale University put themselves into overdrive to accomplish the one thing that so many of this spoiled infantile generation really excel at. It's really the only thing they're any good at, and that is elevating their own unearned moral superiority through ritual victimhood. Now, it seems that the people who all got trophies for everything still need to compete for some sense of identity, and that sense of identity is derived these days from a cutthroat, bloodthirsty urge to see who can show the world who is most sensitive to racial and cultural non-issues. Yale University issued the standard, please don't wear costumes that make fun of or mimic any person, place, thing, activity, philosophy, culture, action, lack of sexual orientation, and 793 other delicate areas outlined on why you shouldn't wear a costume that has anything to do with that. And then Professor Erica Christakis, associate headmaster, and I can't make this up, folks, at Yale's Silliman College, went way too far and issued an email so offensive, so disturbing, that I have to bring in Steve Green and Scott Ott to help me cope with the microaggression that's being directed against we pundits of no color. Fellow cisgendered, heteronormative, privileged racist. Here's what the Yale professor wrote to incite a near riot. Is there no room anymore for a child or young person to be a little bit obnoxious, a little bit inappropriate or provocative or, yes, offensive? American universities were once a safe space not only for maturation, but also for a certain regressive or even transgressive experience. Increasingly, it seems, they've become places of censure and prohibition. Have we lost faith in young people's capacity, in your capacity, to exercise self-censure through social norming and also in your capacity to ignore or reject the things that trouble you? This, of course, resulted in the immediate calls for resignation of her and her husband, the actual headmaster. Is that assistant headmaster? She presumably makes 72 cents on every dollar he makes, of Silliman College at Yale University. And folks, all of that just to say, here's what happened when somebody said, do we really have to be this excited about all this?
No, I don't agree with that.
Then why the fuck did you accept the position?
Because
I hired you!
Goes on for about another half hour or so. Steve, these are adult children who are complaining that one of the assistant headmasters said, do we really need to get quite this lathered up on Halloween?
Boy, wow. You know, in a way, I was really lucky. In Scott's segment this week, we talked about what's going on at University of Missouri, and I attended Mizzou for a couple of years before I ran off to California. Mm-hmm. And over the course of 6 years, 2 years spent in Columbia, Missouri, which is a pretty conservative town, was nevertheless very expanding away from the 3 years of military school and kind of a straight-laced upbringing in St. Louis. And then 4 more years in another college town in Arcata, California, way up on the north coast, about 60 miles shy of Oregon, believe it or not, behind the Redwood Curtain, we called it. And that is about as left-wing wacky as you can get. And between those two places, I got to meet the best, weirdest, most wonderful people that helped to break me out of my shell, that helped make me the person I am today. And without those experiences in these two polar opposite college towns, I don't know who I would be today, but I know I wouldn't like me very much. Because I look back at that guy, I was at 17, 18, 19, you know, he could be pretty dull. I like me much better now, having had those experiences. So let me say that congratulations to the professor who wrote that lovely letter, which so perfectly encapsulated the experiences I had, that I hadn't even noticed them, Bill, until you read that letter aloud. And I went, wow, that is the experience that I got, and I am so much a better, more interesting, and more fun person for it. And These kids at Yale, at Mizzou, they are robbing themselves blind in the name of an ideology that just wants to forbid every little bit of fun they could ever have, and they're doing it to themselves. What a damn shame.
I'll tell you something, Steve. If you were to rope them up en masse and give them a standard psychiatric test, I guarantee you 98% of the student bodies of this country would come out as clinically neurotic, in need of serious psychological care.
Undoubtedly.
Well, Scott, as Steve mentioned earlier, your trifecta this week looks at the incident in Missouri where they were also kind of in near riot mode, not because of racism on the part of the university president, now resigned, but rather some alleged act of action on his part. Now, should Missouri and Yale together and other schools negotiate with these childish, infantile terrorists? Or do you think it's about time we stand up to them and give them a little bit of the discipline they haven't had for one day of their entire lives? Well, I don't know who is we when we talk about standing up, because on those campuses, that culture is so intolerant of any kind of communication like that, that it's just unthinkable that such a thing would happen. I mean, that incredibly sort of circuitous letter that Erica Christakis wrote, you know, I was like, who talks like that? What is she even saying? And she's just very sort of gently trying to say, hey, can't we all just get along? And if somebody dresses in a Halloween costume that you don't like, she said this in the letter, if somebody dresses in a Halloween costume that you find offensive in some way, could you divert your eyes? Or could you say something to the person? So she was actually, she was fostering dialogue. She'd say, if somebody dresses up like a Native American or something and has a feathered headdress, could you say, you know what? I know that you probably didn't mean much with this costume and just thought it looked cool, but I think it's offensive to Native Americans. And you could have a conversation about that. But they don't even want that. They don't want to foster dialogue like an academic setting was designed to do. They want to shut down dialogue and ram through their point of view and make sure that anybody who veers to the right or to the right will be anathema.
It's just unbelievable. These are supposedly adults. Look, it's possible, as we mentioned in Scott's segment, that the president of the University of Missouri was in fact negligent and did in fact deserve to be fired. I don't think it's likely, but it's possible. And if so, there's a procedure that involves investigations, witnesses, corroborations of evidence, and all the rest. We call this structure the law. And the same is true for the infants attending Silly Man College at Yale University. But you know what, folks? I'm over these people. I'm just over them all. I say give them what they want. They can have their space, safe space. They can have their emails. They can have their absolutely neutral Halloween costumes. I don't care anymore. They've been coddled by their parents all their lives, and now they demand to be coddled through college, and they're already demanding that they be coddled throughout their working careers. You know, the problem with socialism is that you ultimately run out of other people's money. The problem with these millennial crybabies is that they're eventually going to run out of other people's parents. And what will they do, these 30 or 40-year-old infants, when that happens? You know, the worst of it is the 1960s radicals were ready to fight and get arrested and get banged on the head. The adult children that they produced, the ones that we're seeing now, are more than willing to protest so long as no one puts a hand on them. But reality is going to put a hand on them someday and someday soon. And when it does, this entire worthless, spoiled, entitled cohort is going to shatter like a prop bottle in a movie. Ka-chish.
And, of course, what could be better to end than on that? Because, as you know, that's what we talk about here all the time. And, of course, Bill Whittle and crew always bring us some great stuff that just rings home. I mean, again, it's all about the fact. It has nothing to do with garbage or whatever. It's straight up. I mean, are we not too entitled? Do we not have those problems? I mean, are we kidding each other here? Well, what we're not kidding about is that'll do it for today. Make sure you catch The Bubba Show at libertytalk.fm on demand. We put our podcast together every day for you. And that will do it for today. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Everybody have a great day. Thank you so much for spending some time with me. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Have a great day, everybody. See you later. I've got the month of May.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.